Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best in since Rails, and you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I talked to Mark Taylor about how he managed his mental well-being when caring for his mother, and then became a publisher of children's books, getting about a six-book deal. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's a long journey to that, but we'll get there.
Yeah. We'll get there towards the end. How are you doing? Everything okay?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm okay. I'm doing well, actually. So all's good. Thank
you,
Gavin. That's
the main thing. That's the main thing, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it is.
Mark, you've got a really interesting story. So, I mean, look, take us from the beginning. I mean, tell us about you and your mum. I think let's start with that.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. So basically, Gavin, my mum has dementia. And she's had it for a few years now, and it's progressively got worse, as it does. She's now 89 years old. And so if I take you back to how it was, my mum had a carer that used to come in three times a day, morning, afternoon, evening, just to kind of give her a medication, maybe cook her a meal, that sort of thing, you know. And at the time, that was okay because I had all that sorted for her and she was living on her own. And I had just taken a new job. I was getting to the age where I wanted to get out of what I was in because I was getting older, and actually physically it was getting more demanding. And I got offered a job in sales with someone that I knew who offered me the job and said, you know, this will see you through till sort of retirement, and it's this and it's that and everything else. And there's not too much pressure, you know. Always remember those words, Gavin. There's not too much pressure.
Yeah, we know that doesn't make any sense.
Right. That doesn't make any sense, does it? And even less sense now when I look back. But I kind of had that in my head.
It roped you in that way. There's no pressure.
Yeah, there's no pressure in sales. Anyway, so my mum, like a lot of people at her age, she had a bad fall when she was at home. And it was in between when the carer was due out the next morning and the evening, and she broke her hip. She was found in the morning, and my mum was terrible. She used to have one of those things that you put around your neck, an emergency red button you could press.
She never wore it.
She used to take it off.
Very common. People do that a lot, I'll be honest with you. Yeah.
So she wasn't found till the next morning, and the ambulance came. The guy said to me, as soon as I got to the house, after I got a phone call when the carer came in the morning and found her, look, Mark, we think she's broken her hip. You can tell by the way her ankle's turned. It's common when we see that it's probably a hip replacement. She's going to, I said, okay, right. So took her into hospital. She hates hospital anyway. And with her dementia, she played up quite a bit while she was in there. They sent her home with a part hip replacement, and she was just starting to sort of get up onto her feet with a frame with our help. And she had what they called a hematoma, and I don't know if you're aware of that in the medical world, but a hematoma is basically a swelling of the leg where the blood comes out the blood vessel.
Like a blood clot, is it? Is it like a blood clot?
It's similar to a blood clot. Mm. And what happens if it's left too long, all of a sudden it can become almost the size of a football on your leg. And the only way to release that is to cut the skin to release the blood, right? So they took my mum up to Wexham Hospital in Slough and did that procedure, sent her home. And by now, of course, she was virtually bedridden from the first hematoma. She couldn't move her leg, couldn't stand up.
That must have annoyed her.
Well, you can't believe it.
With dementia as well.
Yeah. Then the same thing happened on the other leg when they sent her home.
So
it was double whammy. So it happened twice.
Well, she needed a hip replacement on the other leg as well.
No, she had the hematoma on the other leg as well.
Right.
Took her back to Wexham. Same thing in hospital for about, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks up there. Sent her home. Legs bandaged. The legs are virtually raw, and they still are now. Where the skin, because basically at my mum's age as well, they will not heal into that. So she has someone come in now twice a week to change her bandages on her legs.
Wound dressing and all that stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, they brought my mum home, and it was quite obvious then that she was never going to be able to get out the bed with a condition and everything else. And the pressure, Gavin, of trying to find care for my mum to stay at home, because she pleaded with me. She always said, do not let me go into a nursing home. She said, I want to stay in this house and I want to die in this house. Yeah. And that's all she kept on about. Well, I was getting phone calls at all hours of the night where my mum was playing up and everything else when she was in hospital and when she came home. And the pressure of it all, to be honest, it took me down. And I just started a new job and there was pressure there, which I didn't expect to be. And it got me to the point where I decided I was going to take my own life. And I drove my car to work one day and I'd already worked out a place where I could go with a car and drive it straight into a wall. And when I look back now, even Gavin, when I think about it now, looking back, I mean, I might not even have killed myself. I might have crippled myself.
Yeah, you could have just
right?
really been badly
I could have just badly, and I would have left all that for my partner and my family to deal with as well. But when you're in that situation,
yeah. You're in a bad place. You don't think about those things. Yeah,
those sort of things don't.
No,
you resonate with you. You know.
No.
And it,
you're kind of in a zone, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But someone must have been looking over me that day because I was sitting in the car with my head over the steering wheel, knowing exactly what I was going to be doing within the next 5-10 minutes. And I had a knock on the side of the window. And I looked up and it was a guy I used to go to school with who was a postman.
Gosh.
And he saw my car there. He came over. He saw my head on the steering wheel, tapped on the window and he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I've got a few problems." I said, "My mum's dealing with it." Did he know it was you, the person that he went to school with?
Or okay.
Yeah. Okay. When he knocked on the window, he knew the car. He looked in the window and he saw me and he went, "Mark," he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Oh, look, Gary," I said, "I've had a few problems." I said, "My mum's not good." He said, "I knew that," he said, "because one of my best friends worked with him at the post office." And he said, "I knew your mum's not been well, Mark. I knew she'd been in hospital and everything." And I said, "Yeah, I've not been coping too well, Gary." And I didn't tell him what I was about to do, though. And I didn't tell him till about 4 months later.
Gosh. What was his reaction?
I'll tell you exactly his reaction 4 months later. I phoned him and I said, "Gary." He said, "Oh, hello, Mark. How are you?" I said, "I've got something to tell you, mate." But I said, "I didn't know how to tell you before." I said, "But, you know, the day you found me in the car and you made me phone home and speak to Annette and then go home." He said, "Yeah." I said, "I was going to take my own life that day." And he just went, it just went quiet. And then he went, "I'm just so grateful it was me that found you."
Oh.
It couldn't have been anybody else because I was out the way. I thought I would never be found where I was.
That's such a coincidence, isn't it? It's a divine intervention.
Absolutely. You know, and anyway, I went home. He told me to go home. And he said, "If you don't go home," he said, "I'll find Annette and come and get you." He said, "So just go home." And I went home and told Annette, and you know, it sort of opened up, Gavin. You know, we cried together.
At what point did you? We'll come on to the, because there's a lot of stages to this, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. Yeah,
we'll come on to the bit where your partner was really helpful. I understand she's a lovely lady.
Yes.
But
yes.
Before we go there,
yeah.
At what point did you? I think it's more in hindsight you've got to look at it. So, at what point did you recognize that you were tipping? You were starting to tip over the edge because from talking to people generally. And obviously, I've spoken to people in many different fields. It's difficult because it's only when you look back in hindsight and you look back, because we all assume that we'll just deal with it. We just go day by day. We wake up, we deal with it. We go work, we deal with other pressures of life, we deal with it. But in looking back now, at what point were the first indicators that actually, mental well-being-wise, you weren't doing too well?
That's a really good question. And the answer to that would be, If it had been just the one thing, this is a strange thing to say, Gavin, if it had been just the one thing, I may have coped. But with the pressure of the both things, that's when I knew I was tipping over the edge. I was coming home, I wasn't sleeping because I was totally about the job and about the pressure of the job and thinking that what have I done after 25 years doing something else? I've taken this job and it's not working. It's not going to work. What am I going to do? And then the pressure of my mum on top of that, thinking, how am I ever going to sort this out? You know, my mum's, I know that, you know, there's a chance my mum may have to go into a nursing home. They may say she's got to go in a nursing home. And how am I going to cope with that as well?
And the guilt So it
was the combination of the two got me to a point where I couldn't see a way out. But the way out, Gavin, the way out was to talk. Mm-hmm. I know that now, right? And it's the most obvious, probably the most obvious thing after. But at the time, it wasn't to me. It was more, and it may be a bloke thing, but I think that's wrong to probably put blokes in just that pigeonhole, but to bury your head in the sand and go, I can cope with this, or I'm not coping with it, but I'm not going to tell anybody.
No, of course.
And that's what it was like. And until it was almost too late, you know. But someone wasn't ready to take me, you know.
Was it a case of you didn't want to come forward and talk to anyone because you didn't feel that either anyone could help or you felt uncomfortable asking people? What was it that stopped you from talking to people initially before leading to that day?
Because it would make me feel useless.
Okay, so a bit of pride.
Made me feel like a failure. Oh. It made me feel like not only could I not cope with my own mum, I couldn't cope with a new job either.
Of course, there was a number of things basically picking up.
Yeah, that was.
Did you find your nutrition was being affected as well? You weren't eating properly or anything like that, or was you fine in that area?
I was drinking more.
Oh, was you as alcohol substance drinking alcohol?
I was drinking not when I say I was drinking more. I don't mean I was like drinking like some lunatic during the daytime. I was going mad.
Yeah,
but I was finding that when I get in, I'd straight away open a bottle of wine or just to take the edge off stuff and that would increase every night that was becoming as well, you know.
Right. And did you food wise you were eating exactly the same?
I was eating because because Annette was eating, we'd sit down and eat.
Of course. So there was someone there as well.
So. Yeah, so and it wasn't probably anything unusual to be cracking open a bottle of wine for me and Annette because we both share a bottle of wine. But I thought that, you know, hold on a minute, I'm probably drinking more days in the week than I used to, you know, in the evening.
So I suppose in sitting down with your wife and eating, you wanted to keep a normal routine and mask maybe what was going on possibly.
Yeah, she knew that. Annette knew. She knew things weren't right. She knew.
Oh, okay.
She knew. She used to say to me, you know, if it's that bad, you know, just leave. If it's that bad, just leave, you know.
But then you've got that thing as well, isn't it? And I totally understand that. I think we're all a bit like that. We think, well, we're not going to let nothing get us down. We're going to keep going forwards. We're going to find solutions and we're going to overcome the challenges and that kind of thing. Just out of interest, what industry was you in previous to the sales?
Yeah, straight. No, not at all. Well, no, not at all. Me and my friend have been together for 25 years in the cleaning business. And but the thing with cleaning is it's physical. Even if you're like helping running the business and you've got cleaners working for, they don't always turn up. You've got to go and do everything, you know, and where we sometimes we'd be starting at 2 a.m, you know, not finishing till 5, 6 the next day.
Right.
You know, it's a long day and it was hard work. And when you get a little bit old, you start thinking, hold on a minute, you know, this is not what I want as I'm getting older. No, so let's take a bit of money or whatever, get out and try and work to sort of pension age in a job that I can sort of just try and slow it down a bit.
Of course.
Because I had my mum to think of as well. You know, she was taking up more time. And I never had the time. You know, I was like rushing back from jobs to my mum's, backwards and forwards, making phone calls here, sorting this out, sorting that out, you know. Everything, all my mum's bills, all the things with the doctors, the tablets and everything, until we finally got care in place, you know.
Was the other issue, because your mum had previously said to you, when she had more understanding over what was going on, she said to you, I don't ever want to go into a care home. Actually, suddenly, she's got to the point where she might need it. Was you feeling a bit guilty?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm picking it up. There would have been a combination of things going on.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, when your mum sits there, you know, crying in front of you saying, please don't let me go in, mum. It's hard.
Of course.
You know, it's really hard, you know.
Absolutely.
But again, you know, when you get, look, the reason I do these interviews, as we'll get to later, there's something else that's come out of this whole thing, which is good. You know, several, obviously, things have come out of it good. But is to one other person that may be listening to this, may be finding themselves going down that route. And actually, the simplest thing is to talk. You don't have to talk to your family if you think that's too difficult. You can pick up a phone and speak to Calm or Mind, or in actual fact, just speak to your best friend.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Then once you've talked to them, they might lead you back into your family and say, come on, let's sort this out.
Absolutely.
And that's all I needed to do. I wouldn't have got to that position had I opened up and talked to Annette properly in the first place. I thought, you know, I could talk to her about anything, and I can, but I felt a little bit worthless, you know, and
we'll come back onto that in a minute, Mark, because I want to have a good chat about, you know, the support that you got from your wife and how that you moved forwards. But we're just going to do a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Mark, thanks for sharing the earlier part of the interview as we discussed. Because it's a lot to, you know, and we appreciate... you know, coming forwards like this as well. It's a lot of sensitive information to move forwards and talk about, you know. And we've got to the point where you were talking to your partner more in detail about how you were feeling and what was going through your mind. How did Annette help you move forward?
Oh, with everything, Gavin. First and foremost, you know, got me an appointment with a GP. You know, went to the GP. And actually, I found that quite hard when I got to the GP. I found that really difficult. Yeah. I found it difficult to open up, you know, because, to a couple of reasons, really. GPs tend to change nowadays wherever you go. You go down, and if you don't go regularly, they'll say, actually, that one's not here anymore, so we'll book you in with this one. So that little bit of personal that I grew up with years ago, where you probably had the same doctor for 15, 20 years. You know, it's sort of, it kind of disappeared. So you were kind of put in with whoever, you know, well, so-and-so's not on, but we can put you in with this guy. And don't get me wrong, the doctor that I saw, the GP I saw was good. He was great, you know. And I said, look, I said, I've been through a bad patch, you know. I think I've had a breakdown. I said, I'm really suffering with anxiety. I said, and, you know, I went through the thoughts of taking my own life. And he was good. He was good. He said, look, I can offer you help, you know, whatever you want. And virtually, you know, strangely enough, the first thing he found out was my blood pressure was through the roof.
Okay.
Absolutely through the roof. And he said, look, let's sort that out straight away. He said, because that's not helping your overall mental state of your blood pressure being so high as well.
Absolutely.
And stuff. So, he offered me counselling, you know, to get some counselling and stuff. And, strangely enough, I turned it down because I said, actually, I think I found the person that's going to give me the best counselling. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And he said, listen, Mark, he said, the moment you feel like you're struggling and actually that's not doing what it should be for you, he said, you come straight back to me. You know, he was good. He was good. I didn't even know that, but he was good. I can't say anything else, but Annette was just unbelievable. You know, I mean, I'd wake up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and just be crying my eyes out. And I'd say, look, you know, what am I going to do? And the first thing, of course, I did was I did jack my job in because that pressure of that was, and she said, listen, we'll survive. Just get out of it. She said, you can't. Yeah. And it's the best thing. It was the best thing I did. But again, in my mind, I felt a failure if I did that. But it was the best thing I did, you know. And I felt like a ton of pressure was just
came off you.
Was gone.
Yeah.
You know.
And the thing is, I mean, some things are not made for us to be involved with. They're not all jobs.
No. I mean, for several reasons, it wasn't working. You know, I don't, you know, I kind of blame myself for a lot of it, but, you know, you've got to move on. Actually, once you've gone, listen, once you've said, I'm leaving, I've gone, if you don't put that in the bin where it belongs, that'll stick with you. Just throw that in the bin. It's that's a part of your life that's gone and done, dusted.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we dealt with that. You know, you've left it, it's gone, let's move on.
Absolutely. And it is a lot of guts as well, isn't it, to say to yourself, do you know what? This is not for me. I'm leaving it, basically.
Yeah.
You know? And to make those life decisions, they're so difficult. It's those kind of decisions that keep people in some jobs they don't really want to be in or really give them a lot of stress. Some people end up staying there for years.
Yeah. And you, do you know what? You know, Gavin, you're not here long, mate. this life, right, yeah. You know? Yeah. Don't go through your life just thinking, you know, I'm lucky I've got Annette, because Annette, we were able to say, I can leave, you know, and Annette's got a good job and we're able to do that. And, you know, but I would still wake up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and she'd look at me and I'd be sitting there crying and she'd be going like, what's up? And I was going, I just feel like I've let you down.
You know? So you had guilt coming from you for a number of areas.
Yeah.
You seem quite critical of yourself, very self-aware, if that makes sense, and kind of you seem to be measuring your results and performances quite a lot. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think
you're quite
you
critical of yourself. I can understand.
Yeah, I think because you kind of feel that, you know, you probably could have done, but I could have dealt with it better. I think at the time I couldn't have done. But now I feel I've got more of the answers, you know. So I feel like, oh, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? You know, I should have done this and that. Oh, but, you know, you don't. And that's why I'm here, is because anybody in the same position, just talk. Talking's just, you know, bottling it up and keeping it inside. And that's the killer.
Yeah.
That's the killer. Yeah. Let it out. Tell someone.
Yeah.
You always think there's no one that's going to help you, but there is. There's someone there that will help, and there's always a way out. There is a way out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like what you mentioned earlier on. If you don't feel comfortable talking to people that you know personally, there's always outside organisations you can.
Yes, there is, and I get that, and I get why some people wouldn't be, for whatever reason. I get that, but there is. You know, you could, like I said, mind calm. You just phone 111, let them pick the phone up and say, "Look, I'm in a bad place here." You know.
Absolutely.
Find some, you know, but anyway, that's where we were, and then we sorted mum's care out. She's got a living carer now.
Brilliant, so fantastic.
So we got through that. We've got mum a living carer. That's sorted, and this is what I'm saying. The things I thought were, you know, taken, that's sorted. You know, we're in a much better place, and life at the moment is, you know. It's
sounds good. Sounds brilliant. Well, we'll come on to a few more things.
Yeah.
Annette had another brilliant idea, didn't she?
Oh.
I think you called it a masterstroke. Talk to us about that.
Well, she's a genius. So me and Annette had, we had a couple of dogs before, which had passed away and through old age after years and years. And Annette said to me, she said, you need another dog, Mark. And I said, what? She said, you need a pup. I'm going to get you a pup. I said, why? She said, you know how much you loved the last ones. And I said, that is why we can't have another one. Because I said, when they pass away, it's just
terrible.
Like losing a member of the family. It is just like...
it's awful. I know.
When we lost the last one, I was like grief-stricken, you know, from it.
Yeah.
And she said, no. And I said, look, I'll think about it. Anyway, so she's working up the garden in the office one day and she sends me a text and she's contacted a breeder and she's got all the pups' pictures from this litter. And she's gone to me, is there anyone particularly you like them, Mark? You know, and I looked at them and one's just stood out at me straight away, you know. And I sent back, I said, actually, yeah, there is one. I said, bottom right of the picture, you know. And she said, okay, great. She said, because I've made an appointment for us to go and see the breeder. I said, you what? She said, we're going to see. Anyway, once Annette gets an idea in her head and she thinks.
She's one step ahead, isn't she? She's always
One step ahead. Yeah, I'd say that. Off we went. So we went off down to West Sussex to this breeder. And before we went, strangely enough, one of my best friends said to me, I said, look, you never guess what Annette done. She's got me going down to see this pup. He said, Mark, he said, the first pup that runs up your chest and gives you a little kiss, that's the one you've got to keep. And I said, well, I've got one in mind, strangely enough. So you get down there, they put you in the pen, you know, and out comes the breeder with all the pups. Lovely lady. And bought them all out of her husband. Put them in the pen with us. This little pup ran up the chest, give me a little kiss on the side of the cheek, ran back down, and it was the one I picked in the bottom right. 110%. And I looked
what
at the
lady. I can't believe it.
I looked at the lady, the breeder, Annie, and I said, that's him. And she went, sorry? I said, that's the one that I picked out the picture. And I said, my friend said before I came here, if he runs up your chest and gives you a little kiss, or the first one that runs to you, he said, that's the one you have. And she said, I'm really sorry. She said, he's the keeper. And I went, you've got to be kidding. No. She said, no. She said, he's the keeper. He said, that's the one we're keeping. And she said, is it a deal breaker? And I said, to be honest, I said, you know, when you see one, you've got your heart set on. And she said, look, Mark, she said, you can have him.
Oh.
And I said, really? She said, yeah. So I looked at her now. I said, well, we're going to have one. We're going to have him. And that was it. And years, about, I suppose, about 2 years before, we'd been on holiday in Galway in Ireland. And it was a really windy day and it was wet, where it normally is in Ireland, to be fair. And we're walking down the front in Galway by the bay there. And this spaniel ran past me and Annette, and someone was shouting a long way back, really shouting out loud, "Will you come here, Howard? Will you come here?" Shouting this obvious voice. And this spaniel stopped and looked at us and almost laughed and carried on running. And this person ran past us chasing his dog. And I said to Annette that day, and that was like 2 years before, I said, if we ever get another dog, he's going to be called Howard. And that's how his name came about. So he was always going to be a Howard when we got him. And anyway, so that was that. So we got the pup. The pup was ours. Went and picked it up sort of a month later, you know, when he was old enough to be let sort of come home. And we came home and Annette said to me, "We both need a break." She said, "I'm going to book us a week down in West Wittering, which is on the West Sussex coast." And she said, "I've booked us a house on the seafront. We can go down with Howard and just chill and you can just relax." I said, "Great." So when we went down there, I said, "Look, I ran a charity cricket club for about, it's coming up to 20 years now." And I said, "Look, while I'm there," I said, "I'm going to write a book about the charity cricket club." I said, "I've got 20 years of memories." I said, "Just for fun." I said, "And as it's for charity," I said, "when I get the book done, I'll get it published." I said, "Maybe we'll sell all it and all the money will go to charity." So I said, "It's a great idea and I can do that while I'm down there and relax." So I'm sitting there on the veranda looking out to sea, and Howard keeps walking backwards and forwards past me as it is. And I started writing little things down about him because he made me laugh. And every time he yawns, he sort of makes a noise like a whistle as a little pup. And I wrote down "whistle down." And then, but he's a bearded collie. So if people that don't know what a bearded collie is, a bearded collie looks very much like an old English sheepdog. People always call him the Dulux dog. but a beardy is slightly different to an old English, a little bit smaller, but they look
curly hair, like loads of curly hair.
Not really. It's more like a long shaggy coat. So you know, it's a bit sort of that way. I was showing you a picture just now so you can see. There you go.
That's right. Yeah,
you got the picture of him. Anyway, So he's down there and he's walking past me and he's got quite a big bottom. They all have, because of all the fur, it looks like they've got a big bottom, but they haven't really. It's just all fur. So I wrote down "bum steel" and all this sort of stuff. And Annette walked past me and she picked up the bit of paper and she said, like, "What's this?" It was left on the table just by the veranda there. And I said, I was writing these things down about Howard while I was doing the cricket book because he kept making me laugh. And she looked at me and she went, "You got to write a kid's book." And I said, no, I've never wrote a kid's book. I said, I'm struggling to write a cricket book. I said, a children's book, I wouldn't know. She said, honestly, Mark, she said, try it. She said, try and write a kid's book. She said, look at all those things you've wrote down. She said, so I got my phone. I went into Notepad on my phone and I started putting together a story about Howard. And it took me about an hour and a half, the first little story. And I wrote down and I showed it to her. And she said, that's brilliant. She said, listen, I'll tell you what we'll do. She said, when we get back, she said, I'll load it up. We'll see if we can't get an illustrator. And she said, we'll release it on Amazon and we'll give the first one to our granddaughter. And I went, really? She said, yes. She said, what a lovely thing. She said, to give to the granddaughter, to come out of everything. We'll give her one of the books. She said, it doesn't matter if we only sell 5 to the family. Let's just release it on Amazon. I said, okay. So we got back. I phoned a couple of people up and asked people, anybody knew an illustrator? We had three different people that sent us pictures that we asked to do of Howard. I sent them a photo of Howard and none of them really nailed him, really not that well. And then all of a sudden, we were on this bearded collie website for beardy pups, which we joined. And I thought, you know what, I'll just put it out on that and ask if anyone knows an illustrator. So we did. And some lady got back to me randomly. She said, oh, I know this lady, Mark. She's lives up in the Midlands. And she says, she's brilliant. She does books and stuff. And she said, she's always doing pictures. She said, contact her. So I sent her Howard's picture. She came back with a picture of Howard. And she just absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, it sounds it.
Nailed it. And I said, okay. I said, right, we've got the illustrator. We got the book. Annette loaded it up onto Amazon. Great. And we were probably going to publish it. I think it was due to go out on about, say it was the following Friday, and this was the Tuesday of the week before. And I was just sitting at the table with Annette, and she said to me, "I'll tell you what, Mark," she said, "there's a shop just up the road," she said, "and they're doing wrapping paper." And she said, "You can get it designed however you want. So, like, if we took a picture of Howard up there, they can put that and design it on the wrapping paper." She said, "We can wrap the granddaughter's first one, give it to her as a present." I said, "Brilliant idea." I said, "I'll go up there." So off I tooted up the road, went into this little, like, shop office place next to this tea shop. I opened the door, walked in. I said, "Oh," I said, "hello." I said, "Excuse me." I said, "Just come to sort of order some wrapping paper. I believe you design it." And this lady said, "No, no, no." She said, "I don't know where you got that from." And I said, "Oh," I said, "it's my wife." I said, "She thinks that you do wrapping paper." She said, "No, no, no." Anyway, I grabbed the door handle, turned the door handle, went to walk out, and she went, "What do you want it for?" And I said, "Oh, look, I was writing a book about my dog. I've been through a really rough patch. My wife and me have put it together. We're going to release it on Amazon." And I said, "I just wanted to get the wrapping paper for my granddaughter so we could wrap it up." And she said to me, "Can you put a train in that book?" And I said, "What?" She said, "We're the biggest supplier of train books in the UK."
What?
And she said, "If you can stick a train in that book," she said, "we may be able to do some business together." And she said, "You've got 24 hours. Anyway, off I went back home. I said to Annette, if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. I said, I've walked in a shop for wrapping paper. This woman wants me to put a train in a book, reckons we can do business together. So I looked up a story about a train in America, which runs on recycled cooking oil, because the book's about sustainability and love and kindness for 3 to 7 year olds. So I basically took this train and added it into the book and called it the Pawsland Express. Went back up, gave her the story back with the train in it. And she just looked at me and went, "Yeah, we'll get back to you." And I said, "Well, we're going to publish it next week on Amazon on the Friday." I said, "So you better get back to me quick." And she said, "Well, like I said, I'll get back to you," she said. And didn't hear anything. And the following Tuesday, I got a phone call from her. And she said, "Mark, could you come up?" I said, "Yeah." So back I go up the road, walk in her office. There's a load of people sitting around this table. And she said to me, "I just want to introduce you to, this is a head of publishing. He's come down from Birmingham to meet you. And this is the director of the company here, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Oh, right." I said, "Lovely to meet you." He said, "Yeah, Mark, we love your book. We want you to sign a 6-book contract with us."
Gosh, that is unreal. Unreal.
And do you know what I said? This is the first thing, the funniest thing, Gavin. I went, "Yeah, all right, I'll think about it." Why? I said that. I don't know why I said that. And I walked out. And when I got home, and it was at the table where I am now talking to you, and she was on her computer, and I walked in and I sat down, and she looked at me and she went, "You all right?" And I went, "Well, I don't know." And she went, "Why?" I said, "I've just been back up there." And she said, "Yeah. And what happened?" And I went, "They've offered me a 6-book deal." And she said, "What did you say?" I said, "I'll think about it." She said, "Well, you thought about it. Get back up there and sign it." Literally, I went back up within, I suppose it must have been 5 minutes of getting in after speaking to an air. I literally ran back up, walked in their office. They're still sitting there at the table drinking coffee or whatever. And I walked back in. I went, "I thought about it. Yeah, I'm in."
Do you know what? When they say the universe sometimes calls out to you, you know, you open yourself to the universe. It sounds like that's what's been happening with you in the books and everything.
You couldn't make it up, could you? You couldn't make the story up. Of course, then the next thing that went through my head was, I haven't got 6 books in me yet. You know, I've only got the one. But I'll get back.
I'm sure you'll think about it and you'll come up with something.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I've got to get off and write another 5 books for this whole thing, you know. But so then I sort of had another meeting with them and whatever. We signed the contract. The first book came out just before Christmas. I think it was November time. And funny enough, as we talk now, the next book is out tomorrow. The second book's
brilliant.
Out tomorrow.
Fantastic. Tomorrow being the 7th of April.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so that's out. So, you know, that's available on Amazon UK. That's available WH Smith's online, Waterstones online. That's available at middletonpress.co.uk, who's the actual publishers. So, and they're for 3 to 7 year olds. They're about love, kindness, and sustainability. So basically, Howard lives in a mythical land called Paw's Land. And he gets told by the king of Paw's Land, King Porridor, that he has to go to certain parts of Paw's Land because there's something not quite right. So he gets sent to places like Whistledown, Fishley Pool, Tasty Bud, and they've all got some sort of sustainable problem in those areas. And Howard goes down there and sort of tells them what they're doing wrong. And actually, you can do it this way. It's much better for the environment and everything else. So the first one was about an oil leak that was going into the water at King's Castle. And Howard went in there and told them that actually solar panels and the clever pups of Paw's Land use solar panels. And then the next one, he goes to Tasty Bud, which is a gourmet capital of Paw's Land. And cooking oil is blocking all the drains in Tasty. And he says, actually, you can take that cooking oil. We can recycle that and use it as fuel for the train. And that can be used for your train as well. And so it just plants the seed of sustainability into a child's mind, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But from a young age as well, isn't it?
From a young age. And yeah. And in doing that, he does several sort of little things of love and kindness as well when he's in the town, you know, when he meets people and tells them, you know, why are you doing this, you know? So it's a good message. And there's no – someone said to me, actually, when I wrote the first book, they said, do you think you should put an evil character in it? And I went, you know what? The world's
not,
got
not
enough.
Yet. Not yet.
The world, not yet. The world's got enough evil characters,
yeah,
you know?
You're
what,
right
what's, to up, say that what's up with a bit of love, kindness – you know?
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you on that. Mark, we're just going to a quick ad break.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Mark, you've basically there were some unfortunate experiences you were experiencing in your life, and then you became a publisher.
Yeah,
which is unreal. I want to talk a little bit about your wonderful wife. I think she's brilliant.
She's incredible. She's incredible.
She supported you throughout the, you know, unfortunate experiences. And
yeah.
Also, she pushed you to write the books.
Yes.
So she kind of identified all the kind of, you know, the skills you have as well and going forwards. I mean, I'll tell you something. She's brilliant.
She's the best. And she's, you know, I've often said, oh, you know, Howard helped save my life. But of course, it's Annette.
It's Annette.
Annette, she's one in a million, that woman. One in a million. And she is always there, always, I don't know how to put it. She's just like a rock. She's unbelievable. You know, she's just the best, really. Just the best, you know. And she knew Howard would be right for me. She knew it. And she was spot on, you know.
She suggested the idea of the dog as well, didn't she?
She did. It was her idea.
Yeah,
it was her idea. It was her idea of the dog. It was her idea to turn stupid words I'd wrote down on a bit of paper into a book.
Yeah.
Without her, it wouldn't have happened. You know, and whenever when we launched the first book and the publishers put on a launch party and everything, you know, I'm sitting there up the end of this room and they're going, all these people are asking these questions, guys, well, how did this, how did that? And I just kept saying, well, see her over there. She's the real reason. And that's the real reason. If without her, none of this would have happened. Well, you could say without the guy knocking on my window, none of this would have happened.
That's true. Absolutely. There's a few people involved.
Yeah. I went to school with him as a 12, 13 year old, and he's knocking on my window without realizing it and probably saving my life.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
You know, I think life, you know, I don't know whether life's got things planned out for you already, but certainly wasn't meant to take me.
No, of course.
You know, but now, you know, if I can spread a bit of love and kindness to children.
Absolutely.
And they grow up with that, you know, that's great. You know, and the feedback's been brilliant. And we go into schools. We did World Book Day recently. And
oh,
I did
brilliant.
I did a tour of schools reading the book to children, you know. And that in itself, Gavin, was hard. You know what? My confidence to be able to read a book to children was gone. And I kept getting these, you know, the publisher was saying to me, Mark, can you go into this school? Can you go into that school? And I was going, and I couldn't, you know, I didn't really want to say why. I didn't think I could get up and do that. I wasn't ready for that, to stand up and read the book to people. But, you know, that's been a healing process, being able to do that, you know? You know, and now, you know.
You must get a lot of sense, a lot of joy out of seeing the children happy when you're reading them books and, you know, all the rest of it.
Do you know, Gavin, I always said the first child I saw laugh when I used the words King Runnybottom in one of the books, you know, I said that would be enough for me to see the children's laughter. And when I read it in the first school, the first time I did a reading, and the children all burst out laughing. And then every time you read the next line of it, and he was mentioned again, and how I was born in a place called Bumsteel, they roared with laughter again, you know, and that was worth it all, you know. And then of course they come running up and wanted to see Howard and cuddle Howard, and then come
up.
You took
the dog with you. You
take the
dogs.
Yeah, we take the dog where we can. Only thing with Howard is he doesn't like wooden floors, and most schools have got wooden floors.
Yeah, that's right.
And he walks and he hates it.
Does he slip on them?
He slips on them. He hates it.
Oh dear.
But you know, and to see the joy on a child's face when they read your book, and to come up and ask you to sign their books. Wow. I mean, I couldn't get used to that. Could you sign my book, sir? And I was like, sir, who's talking to you? And I was going, of course I can sign your book. And so, yeah, that's been great. And we've had great feedback, you know. And, I mean, even Amanda Holden from Talk Radio sort of spoke about it on the radio. And we had a chat and she said, I love this book. She said, gosh, I love this. So that was nice, you know.
Absolutely.
So we've had Amanda Holden, Hugh Bonneville. And so we've had some quite good people back in the book, which is lovely.
That's fantastic.
You know?
That's fantastic.
And I think they're back in the story, basically. You know, not necessarily. Look, it's really nice of them when they hold up and say, I love the book. But the backstory, and I think they see the fact that the good that's come out of it, you know.
Absolutely, 100%. Are all the books going to be about Howard at the moment?
All the books are about his adventures in Paul's Land. So from 1 to 6 is a different adventure each time, you know. This one was to Whistle Down. The one that comes out tomorrow is to Tasty Bud. And then the one after that is to Fishley Pool, where there's a sustainable problem with the fishing in Fishley Pool, which supplies the whole of Paul's Land. So it's, you know, Paul's Land is in the shape of a paw, basically. And each part of Paul's Land, you know, each pad is a different place.
I get you.
So it's children love it. So
I have to ask, have you got any other ideas about separate stuff? I can imagine, because once you start going, right,
I have.
I was going to say, I mean, and it's completely away from, you know, Howard and you know, his adventures. I've got a funny feeling you've got loads of different ideas about stories.
I tell you what, Gavin, I do a, on the Bearded Collie people are very well into their, you know, the Bearded Collie breed people. They love the breed. It's like a obsession with them when they get a breed.
So it's like a following.
Yeah, like a massive following.
Yeah.
And so I'm on about 4 or 5 different sites, you know, Beardy Lovers, Beardy UK, Beardy World, blah, blah, blah. And what I did, I started putting a picture of me and Howard up and we started having conversations together. So there'd be like me and him standing next to each other and it'd be like Dad talking to Howard and Howard talking back. And they've just like, if I put one up on the Beardy site, I like get like 1,000 hits within like so many minutes. I will say, you can have the next story for 100 hits. And then up they come within so many minutes, there's 100 hits. And it'll be a conversation about, it could be Howard saying to me, we've done a conversation recently about black and white, basically. So he'd say, Dad, am I black or am I white? And I say, well, what do you think you are, Howard? And he'd go, Well, I'm black and I'm white. And I say, do you think it matters that much if you're black or you're white, Howard? And in the book, the new book that's come out, the whole thing is on the back of the book in a conversation with me and Howard. Right. And basically, to finish the conversation as it ends, as thing is, you know, I said, what colour is your friend then? And he said, oh, she's white. And I said, do you think she feels hurt when she's hurt? Do you feel she feels love when she's loved? And do you think she feels pain when she's hurt? And he goes, yeah. I said, what colour would you call that, Howard? And he goes, there is no colour. I went, that's the right answer.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I like that. That's really cool.
And that's the sort
of messages, isn't it? A lot of positive messages.
And it's just literally like that. It's Dad and Howard having chats about life, and they go mad for it. So I have promised that there will be a book of Howard and Dad chats.
That would be fantastic.
And I think it's the sort of book you probably just put next to the lavatory or something, you know, and you just like read it, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, or just on the edge of the table in somewhere when someone comes in and they pick it up and just go, this is kind of cute, you know, all the little stories of life in general.
Absolutely.
One's about war and stuff, you know, everything, you know.
Mark, thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant. And what a story. I mean, you know, from where, you know, the experiences happened in the beginning, being in a negative place to now where, you know, there's loads of stuff going, a very positive place as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well done on that, you know.
But yeah, if I've just finished, Gavin, as we said earlier, to finish with it, is, you know, this is great that you've had me on and it's the story that's all been about me and stuff. But it's not, what I went through is not just about me. It could be anybody. So anybody that's listening, you know, if you want to speak to me, you give them my details. Let me speak to them. But
where can
talk
people
to someone.
Find you? Where can people find
you? Okay, easy. Online, you know, you can find me. If you want to email me, just taylor@sky.com. Easy. You know, anybody wants to email. If you want to find Howard, it's #howard.of.pauseland. Okay?
Thanks for that.
Just talk. If you're in a bad place, talk. That's it, Gav. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And thanks for the messages and the help that I'm hoping people will get from.
I hope so. And thanks for having me on. That's the most important thing.
Thank you, Gavin. Absolutely fine. Absolutely been brilliant having you on, you know. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram @GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.